From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
What we see here today is an ongoing occurrence of the speaker exercising extreme control over most things. But I stand with any colleague that is willing to publicly ask for the speaker to come and clear up the cloud hanging over our state.
I strongly believe that the speaker should take any opportunity, and this is one, to present answers to the questions that I think, you know, all of us have.
He has compromised the integrity of office of Speaker of the House, and he has undermined the public trust. And to me, that's just not acceptable.
That's the Democratic State Representative Stephanie Kifewit. She says she will challenge Speaker Michael Madigan for his leadership in January. She had some choice words about him there. This comes as Madigan is under scrutiny amid allegations he was involved in a bribery scheme where the utility Commonwealth Edison received favorable treatment for helping Madigan Associates with jobs and contracts. Madigan has not been charged. A special House investigative committee looking into this met again this week after word that Madigan won't appear to testify before the panel. And Governor J.B. Pritzker, who you heard there, says he thinks the speaker should take the opportunity to provide some answers. Well, we'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Also, with our panel, who's continuing to practice social distancing from his home, we have Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel. She's a reporter covering state government and politics for NPR Illinois. And Rachel Hinton joins us. She covers government and politics for the Chicago Sun-Times. And Rachel, I'm glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Rachel, the special committee I mentioned met this week. You were following that. And I think if people thought there were going to be some bombshell moments dropped there, maybe they were a little disappointed. But what did we learn this week from that hearing that took place?
This was probably the most public airing of the lengths that ComEd, Commonwealth Edison, went to get Madigan on their side. This week, we heard the six-member panel that's investigating any potential wrongdoing by Madigan. We heard them question or kind of grill David Glockner, who is ComEd's executive vice president of compliance and audit. During this hours-long testimony, we learned a couple of names of Associates 1 and 2. Associate 1 is Ray Nice. Associate 2 is Frank Olivo. Glockner identified those people in a reading of the statements of facts within ComEd's deferred prosecution agreement. One of those names, Olivo, is a man who was the 13th Ward Alderman. Glockner did not identify him specifically as the 13th Ward Alderman, but Olivo represented the ward for a long time. That's Madigan's home base. And he was implicated in a ghost payrolling kind of scheme. Other than that, the committee was pretty cut and dry. There was also a bit of a fight about subpoena power and whether or not the committee has that power. Republicans believe that they do. Chair of the committee, Representative Emanuel Chris Welch, does not think so or thinks it might be premature to do so. But that was kind of the gist of what we learned today. Nothing too crazy on Tuesday.
Well, Rachel, the speaker himself did not appear at this. He did send out a letter late last week indicating that he does not plan to testify before this committee, and he again brushed it off as being a political stunt. So do we know, you mentioned the disagreement there over whether or not a subpoena could be issued to Madigan. Do we know whether or not or how that's going to be resolved? What's next for that?
I would say right now we don't. Republicans held a press conference yesterday showing reporters, the public really, the subpoenas that they've drafted and that they've sent to Chairman Welch, because one of his complaints during the Tuesday meeting was, I haven't seen any subpoenas. You can't call for subpoenas if I haven't seen them. So they drafted these things, they sent them to him and said, look, Madigan, as well as the others that we've invited to testify, can come voluntarily or via subpoena. And we believe that now is the time to really do this because we can't wait. Election day is what, less than 4 weeks away. But I don't think that Welch is going to be on board with that. In a statement, he accused them of using the committee for political theater, and for two of the Republicans, he accused them of using this for their own tough reelection battles. So,
well, Hannah, I know that the Republicans, certainly they're trying to make a show out of this as well, but it seemed as though when I was listening to this that the Democrats also are trying to, I don't want to say it stall it out, but it almost seems as though they're not in a real desire to move very quickly on this.
Right. Yes. And that was one of my questions after the 5-hour hearing on Tuesday. It ended late, or, you know, mid-evening, and then we were treated, us reporters were treated to two separate press conferences. And my question for, I guess, both Democrats and Republicans, but mostly Democrats, because, of course, in the end, their blocking and stalling tactics are going to determine where the committee goes, which in all likelihood is nowhere. But, you know, how many hearings do you have to force some sort of vote or say that this is going to come to some sort of end? Because if there are no subpoenas issued and you're just depending on people coming in front of the committee voluntarily, it's going to be a pretty short list of people who are going to come voluntarily, as we've already seen. You know, the speaker issued a pretty lengthy response to his invitation last Friday, late afternoon, evening, declining to go and saying, you know, reiterating that he had done nothing wrong. In fact, it was definitely the longest explanation that we've seen. Of, you know, since the deferred prosecution agreement against ComEd dropped in mid-July. And, you know, in it, he said there is nothing wrong with recommending people to jobs. There's nothing wrong with, you know, my conduct and, you know, giving him plausible deniability, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it's going to be a very short list, again, like I said, of people who are going to be willing to come before the committee if they are not subpoenaed. And if Democrats continue to block the subpoenas, then what do you even do? Do you just call meetings, sit there and twiddle your thumbs? There's not much to do.
Well, Charlie, let me ask you, when it comes to Speaker Madigan, again, we recorded our show last week. A few hours later, the speaker decided to issue that statement that he would not participate in those committee meetings. But your thoughts, is he helped or hurt by doing this? I mean, from a public standpoint, I think there are a lot of people who might agree with Governor Pritzker that we'd like to hear an explanation from the speaker, a little more than what we've heard so far. Is he helped or hurt by making this move?
I would say that Speaker Madigan's approval level is so low that probably anything he does is not going to make it worse. So him choosing not to appear before the committee is not going to harm him. The question is, what impact will it have on House Democratic candidates and other Democratic candidates in some of the swing districts in the state? And on the one hand, you have Speaker Madigan, who was universally disliked on the Democratic side. And on the other hand, you have President Trump, who was almost as disliked in large parts of Illinois on the Republican side. And it's interesting, this question about subpoenas, because if you actually read the House rules, Rule 92E says the chairperson of the Special Investigating Committee may establish procedural rules, parens, subject to the approval of the speaker. And then it says the committee may, in the discretion of the chairperson, administer oaths and compel by subpoenas any person to appear and give testimony. And so reading the rule, it strikes me that it's up to Chris Welch whether or not Madigan is subpoenaed. And the Republicans can protest, but the rule says it's up to Welch's discretion, and he's the chair of the investigating committee. And incidentally, that's a rule that to be suspended requires unanimous consent of the House.
Well, everything that's going on right now, a pandemic, and of course, people are watching the election, the presidential election and such. Rachel, especially in the Chicago area and the suburbs where there might be some tighter races, are people really paying attention to this situation? Because again, I think they were maybe when the deferred prosecution agreement was announced, but that's several weeks ago, and we really have not seen any movement from the federal prosecutor. Are people still watching this situation?
I think so. I think whenever Speaker Madigan is involved in something, especially something this big, I think people still find it interesting and care about it. Do I think that they're watching the TikTok as closely as we are, you know, watching meetings and reading up on every story that comes out after, you know, a 5-hour long meeting? I don't think so. I think people maybe check in, you know, and say, oh, is anything going on? And then it kind of goes away for them. I think people are really waiting to see if anything comes of this. And I mean, rightfully so, because so far there's been a lot of infighting, a lot of bickering, a lot of back and forth, a lot of disagreements on letters and what letters mean, on what direction they can go in. And I think people might be tired of, you know, the committee itself and the proceedings, but they care about what direction they'll go in and if anything will come of the committee itself and their proceedings.
We'll get into Stephanie Kifowitz's announcement here in just a moment. But Hannah, before we do, I think what Charlie, what everybody was talking about there regarding the election that's ahead. In the past, we have seen some Democrats at times try to separate themselves, distance themselves a bit from, say, the speaker. Are we seeing that this time? I'm not hearing a lot of that, except for just a few people who have been critics of his anyway in his caucus.
Yeah, I mean, folks always have to walk a tight, a tight line, especially if they are Democrats in very tough re-election battles. And, you know, we had this blue wave in the suburbs 2 years ago where a lot of House Democrats kind of swept in, turning traditionally red suburban Republican districts Democratic, at least for the time being. And you've seen folks like Tara Costa Howard of, I believe she's from Lombard, is that right? And she's one of the speaker's toughest critics, one of the first folks who, called for him to step down. But, you know, she's also still getting, I think our friend Rich Miller, Capital Facts, reported that she's still getting money from the Democratic Party of Illinois. And so she's not like she's been abandoned in her race. Stephanie Kifowitz, when she announced her run for speaker yesterday, she said there are $24 million in the speaker's campaign accounts. That's, quote, 24 million reasons I shouldn't be standing here today. And the speaker is a very prolific fundraiser. He always has been. It's very difficult. But especially after Kifowitz's announcement yesterday, you didn't see many people saying, yeah, yes, I'm with Stephanie. I'm going to vote for her. And it adds a really interesting dynamic because as we've seen Republicans seize on this in the last 24 hours, they're always pushing the question, will you, you know, XYZ Democratic candidate or sitting House member vote for Speaker Madigan to be reelected as Speaker? That's always the classic question. And the Democrats always have had a pat answer, well, who else is there? Or, you know, kind of avoid the question. But now, because Kifowitz is out there, it could break the seal on other folks putting forward their names. And I think we would see that if that were to happen after the election, because again, that aforementioned money. And, but this now gives Republicans, it finally gives their message that they beat on the drum all the time, like a little bit of teeth, because now there actually is an alternative.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Rachel Hinton with the Chicago Sun-Times. Charlie, let me go to you on this Stephanie Kifowitz announcement. maybe a little surprising. I think, like Hannah said, maybe more for the timing of this, that it's still before the election and she comes out and says she would challenge the speaker. Is this maybe the, you know, chink in the armor for Speaker Madigan? Do you think so?
If you mean in terms of him not being reelected speaker, no, I don't think this will be something that'll result in a huge groundswell of Democrats suddenly rejecting Madigan. Will he adjust his operation? Who knows? But if you look at it historically, we've not really had on the Democratic side in the House any serious battles for the speakership probably in, oh heavens, probably not since 1975, when there was a, what at the time was a record long process, and it took 93 ballots before a compromise candidate was elected, someone who was not, and the background was Mayor Daley, Richard Jay, the first Mayor Daley, was in charge of the Democratic machine. Dan Walker had been elected 2 years earlier as a Maverick governor. They were at loggerheads over a lot of things. Daley supported the guy who had been the House minority leader before the Democrats took control of the House after the Watergate election of 74, a guy named Clyde Schoet from Anna in deep southern Illinois. Dan Walker supported a Democrat from the Bloomington area. There were a couple other candidates, and they went on and on until finally Daley and Walker reached an agreement after the 38th ballot to back Bill Redmond, who was a Democrat from Bensonville. And it continued on until finally, like 3 weeks after the session was supposed to start, on the 93rd ballot, Redmond finally got enough votes to be Speaker, and he did it with the help of half a dozen Republicans, including Lee Daniels, who was the first Republican to break for him. And at the time, the Republican leadership looked at Daniels and they said, you'll never amount to anything because you're siding with the Democrats. Well, later on, Daniels became a Speaker of the House. So we've not had any real challenges to Mike Madigan in his tenure as Speaker. There have been instances, in fact, the last couple of times, people who did not vote for him voted present, but not a real challenge mounted to him. Well, so I suppose you could see a situation where if there's enough opposition develop, you might see something like in 1975 where not Kifowit, but someone else comes forward to become the ultimate speaker. But I don't think that's going to happen. What might be more likely is that some of the rules might be changed to give members more say-so in the operations. That's something that happened in the Senate when they had leadership battles, again, back in the 70s. The upshot was that the rank-and-file members got more of a say-so in the operation of the place.
Well, at the start of the program, we heard from Governor J.B. Pritzker, and even after the speaker had said, you know, he's not going to testify before this special investigative committee, Rachel, the governor came out this week and said he thinks that the speaker should reconsider that and actually should sit down and provide some information, provide some answers. It almost sounds like these two are not on the same page.
Yeah, I'd say that that's an accurate assessment. I think in the letter that Speaker Madigan released last week, he said that he's provided all the information that he believes that he can. Governor Pritzker, I believe since the deferred prosecution agreement was released in mid-July, has said, you know, we need answers from Speaker Madigan, not from, you know, a stand-in for him. We don't need letters. We need him to sit down before this committee and you know, answer questions that we all have, meaning Pritzker, meaning the committee, meaning ratepayers. I believe Grant Worley pointed to them yesterday in the press conference they had about the subpoenas. And so you're seeing this, I think, growing divide between, you know, Democrats and maybe Speaker Madigan. Madigan is saying, I can't say much more. Democrats are saying, okay, well, you haven't said too much yet. Please tell us something. I think, you know, going back to Kifowit, I think her coming out and saying, I'm going to challenge Speaker Madigan for this role that he's held for, you know, all but 2 years since 1983, I think that that is maybe going to inspire others to come out and maybe either call for Madigan to step down or to continue to put pressure on him to come before the committee and answer the questions that people still feel haven't been answered.
And Hannah, can we read anything into the relationship between Pritzker and Madigan, for example? You know, I know basically they both probably consider themselves the leaders of the Illinois Democratic Party in some way. But, you know, what can we read into this by Pritzker making that public statement this week?
You know, if we go back to 2018, or actually even before that, even the lead up to the Democratic primary for governor, Pritzker was criticized by Republicans and even I think some other Democrats for being the quote chosen candidate of the speaker, even though the speaker didn't actually weigh in. You know, then we also have the governor's, you know, the investigation into his property tax deduction via taking out the toilets in his house. And so he's already marked there. We have no way of knowing whether or not that federal investigation has concluded or have been dropped. But they have both had to walk some very strict lines because of those things. And especially the timing of the speaker and his operation getting tied up in the Me Too movement in early 2018, continuing on. They've had to stay in their own lanes. And luckily for the governor, he's independently wealthy would be an understatement. And so unlike some, you know, Democratic governors in the past, the governor has no need for the speaker's money and fundraising prowess. But, you know, the governor has had to keep his distance because that, you know, like Charlie said earlier, it's not like the speaker is wildly popular, but the governor is definitely, you know, he's got some goodwill. He's got another reelection in 2 years. He wants to keep his image clean. And so the governor saying, yes, he needs to, you know, explain himself, although I will point out that he didn't weigh in on whether the committee should issue a subpoena. That's an attempt at keeping him at arm's length from the speaker.
Well, we'll be continuing to follow this over the next several weeks, see what happens with this committee and, of course, with Speaker Madigan. But we are still within a pandemic here in the U.S. and here in Illinois, and the state has been watching closely where some regions have seen the numbers and the positivity rates go up when it comes to COVID-19 cases. In fact, this week we had another region, Region 1. This is Rockford, DeKalb, a lot of northwestern Illinois. Had to have some health rules tightened there regarding the COVID numbers. And Charlie, of course, news breaking late in the week that the president and first lady have tested positive for the coronavirus. I wanted to get your thoughts, Charlie. Do you think this is going to change some people's viewpoints of how much to open the economy? Because certainly Pritzker has been getting a lot of criticism, even, you know, probably from some within his own party, but certainly from the right, that that some of these restrictions are overblown. Do you think this changes anything?
I don't really know, to be honest. I'm not out and about, as you mentioned earlier. I'm, in semi-quarantine at home, practicing safe distancing from everybody but my kids. And I think it's still too early to tell. I would hope that people who say, oh, this is a hoax, this is all made up, you can't believe it, it's just nonsense, I hope they would take a second look and think about it and say, well, wait a second, if the president and the first lady, with all the safeguards and protections around them, if they can become infected, well, maybe it's not a hoax. Maybe I should take it more seriously. I would hope that would be the case.
The cynical part of me completely disagrees because, you know, as of now, the White House is reporting that the president has mild symptoms And, you know, we don't know what the true extent is, and it's only been something like 12 hours since he tested positive. But, you know, if he doesn't get any worse and he makes a quick recovery from COVID, I think that would give those who think the virus is being, you know, blown out of proportion even more ammo to say, oh my God, it's just a cold. Everything's fine. And, you know, I don't see anything good coming out of that.
All right. Time now for our notes from the field. Hannah, let's go to you first.
Sure. Moody's credit rating agency came out with, you know, it's October, so a spooky warning for Illinois finances. Obviously, we've been teetering on the edge of junk status, as it's called, for the last few years, really since the mid to end point of our 2-year budget impasse under Governor Rauner. But, you know, we've made a few steps pre-pandemic toward a better credit rating. But of course, the worldwide economic recession, some might even say depression, has left us in an even more precarious spot than we were. And it's not like we were doing so hot, even though we had made just a few modest steps toward fiscal stability. So that's something to watch. Of course, the governor blames, you know, says, well, we need help from the federal government. Where's the help from the federal government? But the longer he says that and nothing happens, you know, the more pressure is on him and his administration to figure something out. And of course, the more pressure is on his signature ballot item, the so-called fair tax, what he wants to do with the graduated income tax.
All right, Charlie.
Well, there is I don't know if you would call it a ray of sunshine or a flicker anyway, in that the state's economy is slowly, slowly beginning to recover. According to the Flash Index prepared by Professor Fred Geertz at the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs, in September, the index increased to 95.1 from 94.6 in August. Now, anything below 100 means the economy is not growing, but this shows that the decline is being mitigated. And our unemployment rate went down from 11.5% in August to 11.0%. So we've got a long way to go, but at least the trajectory seems to be heading up.
And Rachel?
I'll be watching two of the representatives who are on the committee investigating Madigan, Representative Deanne Mizaki of Elmhurst and Grant Worley of Naperville, are in tough re-election battles today in Capitol Facts. Rich Miller said, you know, Mizaki's being outraised 3-1 by Democrat Jennifer Zardani, and Worley's being outraised almost 5-1, according to his analysis. I think, especially in this time of watching this committee and seeing what's going on with Madigan, their races will be especially interesting to watch. I believe PACs, political action committees that are controlled by Madigan, have been pouring in money into the Democrats in those races, not just to them, but in kind contributions. So payrolling, making sure that they have staffers, mailers, things of that sort. I think as we get closer to Election Day, we're going to see a lot of even more money being poured into these races. And I think it'll be interesting to see what effect that might have, if it has any effect at all.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Rachel Hinton of the Chicago Sun-Times. You can get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.